Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. Spence, that was for you. I am Eddie Unreva, your host, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Abe Sapien Riley.
Hibbity jibbity.
Okay. And with us, we have Spencer Dr. Broom Williams.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, you're Ian McShane, okay?
All right.
You know what? Whatever. As you can tell, we're super stoked to talk about the recent film on our list, and that is Hellboy, the 2019 reboot. So, we got a lot of things to say, and needless to say, they're probably all going to sound the same. So, before we jump into that, Chad, take it away.
Under the bed. I started that so wrong. Let me start over. Like monsters under the bed, the Filmlosophers podcast keeps coming back to taunt you with new episodes each Wednesday.
Under the bed.
That's so awkward. You can catch... can't. You can catch us on a whole host of streaming platforms, including Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom. Okay, we don't really taunt you. It's rude to play with your food. By the way, in case you've forgotten, we're presented by our overlords at Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios.
Those guys are the worst.
It's true.
As a side note, I thought you were going to start singing Under the Sea. I had no idea what was going on.
Hey, anything goes at this point.
Well, once you're done wrestling with your vampiric luchadors, tell us how it went. Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers.
You can't keep it steady.
Because you're laughing.
Under the bed.
And Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Last but not least, we recently celebrated our third year anniversary and as a podcast.
Under the bed. Third year podcast.
Which means you have nearly 160 episodes to catch up on our website at filmlosophers.com.
That's right. And I really quick wanted to point out a little thing that another opportunity where you can actually listen to us is now on an app called Podcoin. And not only can you listen to us, but you also can get paid for listening. You get paid in the amount of minutes that you listen to, and it amounts to money somehow. Check it out, podcoin.com.
I'm like, wait a minute, we don't get paid.
We don't get paid.
How do our listeners get paid?
We don't get paid.
This sounds like a scam. Are we scamming people?
No, it's just another app that's out there that I happen to come across today. Podcoin. Check out all your latest podcasts, all their episodes, and you get paid for listening. So,
wow.
And I figured there'd be.
We don't.
I figured there'd be a good piece of news before we jump into our review.
Thank you for that.
Anytime.
Under the bed.
Under the bed, third year. Speaking of which, we are talking about the recent film Hellboy of 2019. This film has been one of those ones that's kind of been, you know, both hated on and praised for because of its, first off, for the fact that they're rebooting the, you know, franchise from the master himself, Guillermo del Toro. They're changing that up and doing some new things, and so they decided to go in a different direction with this film. And so it's been talked about, there's been trailers, there's been, you know, hints, there's been talks about, oh, it's not going to be the PG-13, it's going to be super R, blah, 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 which has been kind of their running, you know, their headline for a lot of their running marketing material. So I don't know, but before we get into it, Chad, give him that official synopsis.
I'm just laughing because Spencer's over here trying to calculate how to make money on Podcoin because you said this. So he's over here like working this pyramid scheme already.
Create an account for us and then we'll listen to ourselves over and over. How about that?
It's going to be a lot from my calculations. It takes like 200 hours to make $2.
I think that's about how many episodes we have.
Just turn it on in the background at work. Based on the graphic novels by Mike Mignola, under the bed. Hellboy, caught between the worlds of the supernatural and human, battles an ancient sorceress bent on revenge.
Directed by Neil Marshall. Can any of us talk
it's
today?
It's just a thing. Directed it's okay. We're adding to the allure of the film.
We are.
I guarantee you.
Directed by Neil Marshall, the film stars David Harbour in the title role, alongside Mila Jovovich, Ian McShane, Sasha Lane, Daniel Day Kim, and Thomas Hayden Church. Those are honestly the only people you're going to recognize. And even then, Thomas Hayden Church has like maybe 5 minutes on screen out of the 2 hours.
Maybe
hour
a
movie.
Minute and a half.
So, yeah.
But he's in there.
It was stated early that this will be a complete reboot. Oh my gosh. I can't talk. It's your fault, Spencer.
What did I do?
Under the bed.
It was stated early that this will be a complete reboot and not a continuation of the previous movie starring Ron Perlman and directed by Guillermo del Toro.
It's your boy.
Mike Mignola, creator of the comic series, took a more direct involvement in the production of this film than he did on the Del Toro Hellboy films. According to him, the idea with this one was to downplay the superhero elements in the film and stay closer to the darker tone of the graphic novels, making a much more horror-oriented entry into the franchise. So, needless to say, the creator himself had a little bit more of a hands-on role with this particular film, so he says... We don't know. That's all behind the scenes and whatnot, but film speaks for itself. The film had a budget of $50 million estimated around, and its opening weekend brought in a whopping $12.9 million. And that's domestically only because it hasn't been released worldwide. So obviously its grand total is around $12.9.
So it has a shot at breaking even.
It does. And it's interesting because I really should have looked up the opening weekends for like the first Hellboy film and all that, because it's interesting for this particular film. There's a lot of allure for this franchise. Like, it's one of those unnoticed type of franchises, those properties where people don't really know of like the Umbrella Academy. Now they know of the Umbrella Academy because of the Netflix series.
Sure.
Or, you know, things like Cloak and Dagger, which is not a very mainstream Marvel series run. Like, not a lot of people know that. We've talked about this on the episode several times on this podcast about the Guardians of the Galaxy. That's also not
sure.
And so Hellboy is one of those comic book runs where it's been around since 1994. You know, it's been around for a good amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not hadn't been as popular until Guillermo del Toro brought it to the big screen and created a, you know, magic with Ron Perlman in the film
and all of his like costume/prosthetic wizardry that he's known for. I mean, that's what really sold a lot of people on it, was the visual spectacle of it.
Yeah. So it looked like, let's see, opening weekend.
Oh, it's $23 million, which is adjusted for inflation is $31 million.
Okay, so I mean,
I love this guy. He is on top of it.
Right.
He even adjusted for inflation. Again, he's trying to break this Podcoin scheme.
He's
adjusting everything for inflation.
He's in money mode right now.
He's like 200 hours today, but in 1984, it would have been 112.
This is what happens, folks. This is what happens when we come across a movie that we're just not too sure about. One of the biggest things for me is that I've been hesitant about this film for a while now, mostly because of the fact that not only are they not using the genius of Guillermo del Toro, which is a big reason. Obviously, anybody who listens to the podcast knows.
That's my boy.
That's your guy.
But the fact that they're diverting from the fantastical aspect, they're creating a pretty much a mirror image of what the comics are going to be about, or what the comics are about. They're trying to create that relevance of like, oh, people who like comics are going to like this. No, they're going to love these scenes. They're going to love that. They're going to love these things, which they've talked about in interviews and in press junkets. It's going to be more closer to the graphic novels, i.e. why we mentioned that the creators was closely tied to the film. So I've been hesitant about this film for a long time. Even when they first showed that image of David Harbour in full getup, he didn't look like the comic. He looked like a goblin. He looked like something like a demon. as opposed to, mind you, yes, I know Hellboy is a demon.
Like,
sort of
that's kind of the point.
But no, I mean, you look at the comics, even in the early 90s, like in 94, when it first debuted, you know, all the way through the years, Hellboy doesn't have, like, he still has humanistic features. He's not completely, like, grotesque or anything. And in this one, they just needed to paint him a different color, and he could have been, like, a troll. He could have looked like a, you know, some kind of giant ogre or something.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem right, I guess. It just didn't feel right when I saw that image. I don't know. I mean, they didn't let him come back. They didn't let Guillermo del Toro come back, so that's it. I'm just going to be quiet.
They didn't let him, or he opted out?
I don't know. Like, Ron Perlman.
I mean, he's your boy.
It's true, but...
Your besties for the resties. Don't you have the inside track here?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I called him yesterday. We talked about breakfast, y'all, that kind of good stuff.
He calls him Guy.
Guy. Hello, Guy. But I don't know. I mean, what about you, Spence? You've been also hesitant about seeing this film for a while now. Like, almost as long as I have, I believe, if not probably longer, about not wanting to see this. What were some of the reasons why you weren't looking forward to it?
Okay, that's... like putting the idea that I put thought into not wanting to see this. Like, I saw the trailer like in the movie theater and I checked out halfway through it because I was like, I don't think so. Like, this doesn't seem like it's going to be very good. So when this ended up on the schedule, I was like, all right. And then we went and saw it, and I was pretty much correct in what I thought of the movie. Like, I gave the movie a chance, to be fair. Like, I am willing to be surprised.
I'm glad we taught him something, Chad.
Yeah. I really am. Like, this is an important milestone of growth.
It is.
I'm impressed.
What about you, Chad? Like, like I said, for me, it just didn't seem right. Like, I didn't want to invest my time into this because it didn't look like it had care or love. Like, yeah, I'm looking at Ron Perlman in the suit right now, and I'm like, I love the poster by itself. The poster is great. And then we have this lovely...
Yeah, I mean, it's not the kind of subject matter that I'm overly, overly fond of. I've only seen the first Guillermo del Toro Hellboy. I haven't seen Hellboy 2.
Golden Army?
Sure. I haven't seen it. But the thing that in spite of the subject matter not really being my cup of tea, you can see a clear attention to detail and level of craftsmanship. Mm-hmm. And like that deep appreciation and well, just an effort.
Yeah,
being
true.
Made. And when I saw the trailer for this version of Hellboy, number one, when the news came out that they were hiring, you know, David Harbour from Stranger Things to be Hellboy in a remake, I was like, huh, I didn't realize that it was a popular enough, like, sub-franchise to warrant another go.
Yeah.
But okay, fine. And then there was a little bit of news here and there, and then the trailer came out, and I was like, oh, that doesn't look a thing like Guillermo del Toro's, like... ambiance or tone or anything. And I don't say that as a way of saying, well, you should have stuck with his way, but it seemed sloppy.
It like, did.
There, if you're gonna remake something, it had darn well better be an improvement, not, well, whatever an anti-improvement is. The trailer I only saw one. They probably released more than one, but I only saw one, and I thought, oh, well, that's easy, like, easy to skip. Like, I'm not going to have a problem missing this movie because it doesn't look like it was made well.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we'll get to it, but I, like Spencer, I think that sometimes your first reaction is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true. And it's, I think that really kind of hits it on the head in terms of just the trailer alone. Like, not even seeing, you know, the film itself, even before that, like, the trailer seemed like it was hokey. Like, they were really working hard to take themselves seriously, but his prosthetic and all the makeup and everything that he went through made him look like almost like a character, you know, with somebody inside a suit. That's what it seemed like. It seemed very wooden. It seemed like his face had no muscle movement at all. Whereas, and I hate to draw the comparison, but whereas, like, with Guillermo del Toro's, Ron Perlman's portrayal, it's much more fluid. It's actually his face. There's no real big prosthetics on him other than like probably defined cheekbones or the way his hairline was or the way the hair, like.
Are you saying Ron Perlman already looks demonic?
He does, actually. He looks very demonic. Yeah.
But, I mean, he has much more distinctive facial features to kind of play off of with makeup than Harbour.
Yeah. And not to say that David Harbour is a bad actor. Like, everybody loves him in the Stranger Things series, you know, and I'm pretty sure he's done a ton of other great things. So he's probably not, well, I'm not going to lie and say I know what he's done, but like, I'm pretty sure he's done a lot of great things and he's overall a good performer.
Hey, don't steal my line.
I'm just
saying.
Don't
steal my, I haven't done homework line. Because I need that line. I haven't done any homework for this episode.
Well, technically, I overdid on the homework.
You way homeworked. You way homeworked on this one.
So I was telling Chad before this episode started, So I like to have at least a good cursory knowledge of the information that I'm about to be, you know, letting go. And
most people would interpret that as, oh, take a look at Wikipedia, maybe watch a 5-minute video on YouTube.
So I rewatched.
That's cursory knowledge. What did you do?
I rewatched the first Hellboy, rewatched the second one.
And?
Actually, I also watched the first one twice because I saw it again this morning. Then there are two volumes of Hellboy's complete works of short stories. Each one's about 360, 370 pages each. And I read both of them, so both volumes. And mind you, I had never read them before. Watching these films, like the Guillermo del Toro Hellboy franchise, was enough for me. Like, I didn't have to go and dig. I liked what was served there. I'm happy with that.
It's your bro.
Exactly.
Totally.
This, though, like, it. So, before I get into the.
And let's clarify, you did all this homework after having seen the remake.
Yeah.
You watched essentially 3 Guillermo del Toro movies and read 700 and some odd pages of graphic novel.
Give or
material
take.
As a response to the film.
Yes. Because, yes. So, before we jump into that, other expectations. So, one of the biggest things I just did not want to see with this film, I didn't want to see a film that was just graphic or obscene for the sake of just being graphic and obscene. Like, I'm all for an action film that has a lot of, you know, violence and blood and so forth if there's a purpose to it, if there's something happening. Great case in point, and I'm probably stealing this from you, Chad, but great case in point, Gladiator. Gladiator is an incredible film, action-packed, a lot of blood, especially for its time, which was about 20 years ago.
Pertaining to the subject matter.
Of action and
gladiatorial combat. Warfare. I mean, it kind of, you know, it goes with the territory.
Exactly. And it
movie ever made, by the way.
And it was a really great film. And
movie ever made.
Bears beat Battlestar Galactica.
Very good.
But I felt like there was purpose behind that film for everything that was in it. This film, I was really hoping that it didn't go down that way because of how hard they were marketing their, oh, we're going to be R, you're going to see blood, you're going to see guts, you're going to see stuff and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, but if I don't have to, do I really need to? Like, it's like getting a meal served and someone gives you like an extra, extra helping of like green beans. Like, yeah, I mean, they're probably good, but I don't need more than I have already on my plate. You know, why give me more? It's kind of like that. And so that was my biggest concern. That was my biggest hope in terms of coming into this with expectations, was it wasn't grotesque or obscene for the sake of just being grotesque and obscene. So what about you, Spence?
Oh, so let's get this out of the way now. I haven't seen the other two Hellboy movies.
Oh my God, Spence! Again?
Like,
why didn't you say something?
I wanted to go in this as someone who hadn't seen any of it.
Oh,
so
Spencer!
It's for research.
This is like Unbreakable again. This is, what's the other movie that he didn't see?
Well, like basically any movie that we've reviewed that has a predecessor.
The Oceans movies, we had to rewatch those.
Yeah. So Spencer. I used to be poor when I was in high school. around the time that came out. So, you know, I haven't had time in like the last 20 years to check out the movie.
Don't you feel bad about yourself, Eddie?
No, not at all. Just Spencer. Does.
No shame.
I
have sympathy for you.
I have none. You should have called me and told me.
No, I want to go in with like,
with what?
I know nothing. Blank slate.
You
that's
know
what I want.
Nothing, Jon Snow. Game of Thrones past Sunday. No.
That's
but,
why I.
But that's the thing, though. I just. Spencer.
Because so, now I can speak to someone who's like, I haven't seen this franchise at all. Is this worth seeing?
Yes! With Guillermo del Toro?
No, I'm talking about this movie. This the one we're not, reviewing. We're not reviewing the other ones.
He is always here. Don't you dare.
Oh, mercy. Under the bed. God.
Oh, my gosh.
Spencer. The funniest part of that is that there's nothing about anything being under the bed in this movie. Or any of them, to my recollection.
I don't remember any of that. So, okay, you haven't seen the originals. All
right. Right.
Great.
Yes.
Bully for you. Mm-hmm. No, so do you have...
But are you happy that you saw this one?
Well, no. Quite clearly.
Did it
no.
inspire you to go see the other ones?
Well, now, actually, kind of, because it's like there must have been something here at some point. Yes. Or else, why would you even bother?
The originals are great.
Excellent point.
Like, if you're... So, quick side note. If you're, like, a fan of, like, Pan's Labyrinth or even Kronos or any of the films that he had done prior to this, like, the whole wait, stop.
It's like
freeze.
You didn't
hold on,
hear
hold on,
the part where
hold
I
on.
Said I was poor and could not afford anything.
He hasn't seen any of those things, Eddie.
You haven't seen Pan's Labyrinth.
Eddie, are we going to do this whole
episode?
Spencer,
oh my gosh.
What movie has
Spencer
seen?
Spencer.
Honestly, this is more entertaining than the movie was. I see no fault.
Let's just throw out random movie names. Which one haven't you seen?
Well, I feel like that's a large pool to pull from.
Yeah, it is. So, well, why you're shocked is the real surprise here.
Why am I shocked?
Yeah.
Because we're reviewing a movie that's being rebooted.
Yeah. But now I...
Why not see the original?
Because...
That's like saying we're going to review the Ten Commandments but not see the original with... Wait, have you seen the original Ten Commandments?
Wait, there's two Ten Commandments
movies?
Oh, my
movies? God!
I'm only familiar with the one from the 50s.
I was going to say, he's probably only seen the original and not the...
There's another one?
I think there was like a made-for-TV version. I don't know. Oh, I've never seen
garbage.
That one.
It's already come out. Wow. Okay, aside from, you know...
Speaking of garbage.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Excellent segue. So, despite breaking my heart, Spence, were there any other expectations that you had for this film?
No, I told you all of them in the first place. I don't know why you came back to me.
Well, I'm just making sure you get all your expectations out of that way.
Yeah, I had none because I thought poorly of the movie.
Okay. Chad, any other expectations for the film?
No, I didn't... I wasn't impressed with the trailer. I went in kind of not wanting to see the movie, but I always try to give things a fair shake. I mean, there have been other films that I haven't wanted to see. For example, It, which, Eddie, you're a huge fan of Stephen King and the horror genre and all that. I'm not. No. I wasn't fond of it. I didn't want to see it, but as much as I didn't like parts of it, there were some other parts that were really well done, and I gave the film credit for it.
That you did.
So I'm not afraid to reverse course when it's earned.
Yeah.
And honestly, in the beginning of this film, it starts in like Arthurian times. So King Arthur, medieval times, or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize. I mean, I guess I probably didn't pay much attention to the trailer or any of the preparatory like write-ups and things to know that they were referencing Arthur and Merlin and Nimue and Excalibur and all of that. So it started out and I'm like, oh, now this is unexpected and could be kind of interesting. And as soon as that introductory sequence was over and we went into like the movie proper, I really just lost all interest. Like the momentum died for me.
Yeah.
Way early. And it never really recovered.
It's true. Just so diving right into this film, obviously we're introduced to a slew of the characters that are in it. And even before we're really introduced to any of the main principal cast, we are introduced to Mila
Jovovich.
Um, and her character as the Blood Queen or Nimue or something along those lines. It's really not worth remembering because she's a forgettable character.
Yeah, but like Nimue is from Arthurian myth.
Oh, is she?
Not in this stuff went way ridiculously far, but yeah, she's like a lover slash nemesis of Merlin.
So okay, that's actually a really big question I wanted to ask, but I the way the rest of the film panned out, I honestly thought it was kind of like a throwaway, like, oh well, this is just an added character into that, and Arthurian, you know, lore doesn't really matter.
No, but they lifted her out of they screwed her up royally, but they lifted her out of Arthurian legend.
Okay, okay, so we're introduced to Mila Jovovich's character as the Blood Queen or Nimue. And even before the film gets underway, they introduce at the beginning a portion of the Arthurian tale that you have not heard of, or the unknown parts of King Arthur's story. And it's interesting because we keep getting like slews of like King Arthur references or King Arthur films in the last 2 years, 2-3 years, that have been just roller coaster ride, up and down, up and down. Yeah. Like, you have anything from we reviewed The Kid Who Would Be King not too long ago, lesson 147. Mm-hmm. And that was actually enjoyable. That was a good one. With
yeah, I mean, it was a kid movie, but it was
a kid movie.
It was fun. It was somewhat unique and different
to the more grown audiences. For King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, with lesson 63, which was directed by Guy Ritchie. And then you have the lovely, the piece de resistance for Spence, the Transformers, The Last Knight.
I have lesson no 68. Idea what movie you're talking about.
I really just want to...
Once again, he hasn't seen it.
No, I know. Poor. Got it. But here's the thing.
Wow.
No, I wasn't poor then. That was on principle. See? Let's not bring back out the Bumblebee arguments.
Oh, we will revisit that argument. Trust me. But it's like King Arthur is becoming the in thing right now, just as an aside. King Arthur seems to be like something that's coming back into the forefront of storytelling, of cinematic storytelling. I'm wondering, like, I wonder if somebody's going to really jump on it and do something really massive with it, just because it keeps being brought up.
Well, and I mean, you've also got, like, the BBC did Merlin, right, of, like, the young days of Merlin and the yeah. young days of Arthur and whatever, even though they were contemporaries in that and they weren't. Like, Merlin was significantly older in the actual Arthurian saga or whatever. But, I mean, you've had other properties that have also... It's kind of almost like an evergreen story, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just never out of season if you do it right. Of course, this is not a King Arthur movie. This is Hellboy.
No.
But they interweave in different parts certain elements of the Arthurian cycle... you know, here and there. And for me, that should mean I would like it.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of my favorite story cycles. I can't get enough of it. I have book series that are based on it and whatever, but good night. This thing needs to be put under the bed. Like, it's just, it was a mess.
And in all honesty, now that I think about it, I mean, technically, it is kind of an Arthurian tale.
Well,
like, it, as much as like a kid who would be king in some aspects.
It's a very similar vein because like there's similar things that happen.
Yeah. So as we'll get into that in a little bit.
I mean, one of the things that they were able to bridge off of, and it's a fairly easy connection to make, is unlike more modern sort of epic storytelling cycles.
Yeah.
Even something as modern as like a Robin Hood, which, you know, similar origin, like area of origin and whatnot, but closer to modern times, even though it's still very old.
Yeah.
It tends to be very practical, right? You've got
yeah.
rich people, you've got a dude who puts together a band of merry men, steals from the rich and gives to the poor. And, like, people are being oppressed, and they don't want to be oppressed anymore, right? The Arthurian saga is older and harkens to a time period even older still, and still has a huge element of magic. The fantastical, the ethereal, you know, all of that, like, you know, the land beyond the fog, the land beyond the mist. You've got fairies and sprites and nymphs and whatnot kind of intermixed with the human characters.
Yeah.
You know, in that saga. And I think because Hellboy is also very like mystical, supernatural, kind of is the vein that it flows in, the lane that it drives in.
Yeah.
You know, it's an easy parallel to try to shoehorn in. I don't know that they succeed.
It's an easy reach.
But yeah, it's an easy connection. Like, oh, well, you know, Excalibur was part magic as a sword. Yeah. It wasn't just a sword. It also was something special. And, you know, Nimue was, I believe she was a wood nymph slash witch or something. But, you know, so there the connections are there to be made if you want to.
Ah, that makes sense then why when she gets cut, in the beginning of the film when she gets stabbed or whatever and her blood goes into the tree. That made no sense to me at first. I was like, why? Like, how does this tree just accept your, you know, DNA like that? Like, was there a application process?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that she's a forest nymph or something like that. That's how she got her start. I believe it's been a little while since I've studied like deep Arthurian mythology, but I believe part of the like Merlin's magic, and they were kind of in love with it for a while, and I think it corrupted her to some extent. So it's partially his fault that she ended up, you know, becoming a bad person, a bad character in the original.
Yeah.
He's not really super connected to her in this. Both of them appear multiple times in this one. Arthur really is only in the beginning.
Yeah.
And aside from all that, it's a Hellboy movie. So it's sort of just like, let's go ahead and connect this to something you might be familiar with.
Yeah.
And then go on from there.
Yeah.
Because they immediately transition out of, you know, Arthurian Dark Ages England into Tijuana.
Tijuana in modern day, which is where we get our first introduction to David Harbour's Hellboy portrayal. And mind you, I try to come in with some sense of optimism. I want to see something that works. Obviously, this isn't going to be my Guillermo del Toro hashtag not my Ron kind of situation here.
Wow, did you really just do that?
But I was hoping that it actually would work out. And seeing him, it just screamed wrong. Like, nothing about him looked kept, like, you look at the comics. So, thankfully, with my limited amount of time that I've had with the comics, I mean, you look at every single iteration of Hellboy throughout the comics, and at least he keeps himself well. Like, his hair is not all in, like, a wiry mess. His beard is there. He's got his beard well, you know, kept. His face, his facial features look that of almost humanistic, but his body proportions and everything, that's the part that's kind of monster-like. And in this one, he really did look like a goblin of sorts. He looked like a beast. His jaw protruded out really far. His chin was really kind of beveled under, and then his cheekbones looked pretty much demonic. And everything about him looked different, I guess is the word I'm looking for, but not in a good way, you know? And that was right from the get-go, as we see him try to save his friend, one of the agents who happens to be on site in Tijuana investigating a vampire infestation of some sorts. Which, that's interesting. Just one guy fighting against a whole vampire infestation. That's like saying, Spence, you know, the White House, it's falling over. We're going to send you to go take care of it. Like, it seems like a multiple person type of job, but this one guy must have been very capable.
I believe Spencer could hold up the White House.
Oh, I thought I was pushing it over.
Oh,
well.
You got to make progress.
Maybe you could do that too.
There you go. Yeah.
You're a strong dude.
Mr. FBI agent, don't put us out, please, if you're listening. But it's interesting because we get the introduction of David Harbour's character. We get the introduction as time continues on. Of his father, Dr. Broom, who is played by Ian McShane, who seems like this disconnected yet very focused and driven dad who is his guardian. He's his keeper. You know, he's there to, you know, you see him, they do the average, you know, father-son thing. You know, son's like, oh, dad, I don't know. And the dad comes in and shaves his horns. You know, the normal things that you do with your dad kind of stuff.
Your typical, teenage son.
Yeah.
Horn
shaving
kind
of thing, with a nice file and just
Yeah. A little sawdust.
Exactly. Which reminds me, I think they paid more just to get that dust, the horn dust looking when they're filing down. They paid more for that than the other CG in the rest of the movie.
Totally.
Because the dynamic between them is really interesting. You don't know if it's like a legit relationship, but then at the same time, you're like, well, I mean, yeah, okay. Like, Ian McShane is just kind of all over the place as a father figure slash dad slash guardian. We see him go to London. He meets up with the other characters, which include Daniel Dae Kim and Sasha Lane. Daniel Dae Kim is another member of the BPRD branch out in London.
Well, not yet. He's part of M11.
Oh, he's right. He's part of M11. I apologize. You're right. And then Sasha Lane is a little girl that he had saved years prior from these from being replaced by a changeling.
Yeah, it was a mess.
Well, and here's the hard part about it all is that
also the whole like let's use the poem Jabberwocky to like confirm my identity to you, like that all of it just.
Well, and it's weird because that's an Irish poem, right? I know it's from the Lewis Carroll.
Yeah. I don't know what his background was, but
it makes no sense.
It's literally like a gibberish poem. It's about the melody of the sounds of the syllables,
yeah,
more than it's about anything in particular. It tells a story, but it's really about the sound of saying all these gibberish words.
Yeah. And mind you, let me remind everybody here that, number one, this will be a spoiler review. If you hadn't seen it this weekend, let us warn you now so you don't have to see it later. And if you have seen it, lament with us.
Strap in, listen for the next 15 minutes, and then come to the right conclusion, which is save your money.
And if you have seen it, lament with us. Let us know you are mourning with us. And here's the thing. A lot of this information is given right away at like the first 20, 25 minutes of the film. Like, everything that we've said has not surpassed any kind of, like, point of no return where you're like, oh, I'm so deep into this story and this revelation, that, and this is that. Like, all of this has happened in the first 25 minutes of the film.
Yeah, like, literally, you've got King Arthur, Blood Queen, Luchador, Vampire, Ian McShane pretending to be Ben Kingsley in one of Ben Kingsley's lesser roles, and terrible CGI, filing horns, bad prosthetics, and confusion.
Not to mention,
you through like the first 12 minutes of the film just there.
Not to mention assassination plot. You have seance sequences. You have terrible blobs that come out of a little girl who sees dead people. It's The Sixth Sense Part 2. And out of all of that, within the first 25 minutes, I was still not impressed enough to want to still engage with the film.
Can you explain for us, Eddie, what happened when you first went to see the Hellboy remake?
I'm so glad you brought this up.
So, I usually give the guys a hard time because so far we've had both Chad and Spence fall asleep at multiple times.
Totally.
I think both of you have fallen asleep twice.
Yeah.
So, I went to go see this movie, and I believe it was a Saturday. Saturdays, it was one of the morning showings, the matinee showings, and I go, and I'm like, all right, let's watch this. Let's do it. I just want to get it over with. The movie starts, and they go through the whole King Arthur sequence, and I'm so bored with the King Arthur sequence because it's like, I've seen this, been there, done that. I would rather watch the Merlin sequence again from the last night than see this whole thing again. And that's harsh. That's
that's really tough to swallow.
But I'm watching it, and I'm like... And then I see that they're in Tijuana. I'm like, okay, this might be interesting. And all I remember is looking to my right, and there was a couple to my right-hand side, and it was the guy, and then it was the girl. And the guy was sitting right next to me. Apparently, his seats were right there. There were the reserve seatings over at the Regal down the street. And so I'm like, all right. And then I turn back, and all I remember is lights out. Like, I fell asleep. I don't remember nodding off. I just remember I closed my eyes, and...
So to clarify, both of the films that I have fallen asleep in,
yeah,
I've gotten at least 25 minutes in. Spencer, I don't know what you can claim.
I know I got in that far, at least one of them.
Yeah.
I can't remember the other.
The King Arthur sequence into Tijuana is about 3.5 minutes.
It's so fast. Like,
Like, three, seriously, no joke. It's about 3.5, maybe 4 minutes.
Essentially, you sat down and almost instantaneously fell asleep. That's the only way to interpret
Look,
that.
Look, you know what? You don't know how I sleep. I was just, you know, whatever. So, I just remember.
My point here is, I think, given how rapidly you lost consciousness, I think this, and because I've... The ones that I fell asleep in, granted, you were there to elbow me and wake me up.
That's true.
Within a couple minutes because I start, let's call it breathing loudly. Spencer, I think you've been asleep for a few minutes but woken up. This man over here fell asleep 4 minutes, and that's being generous,
into the movie
and woke up right before the end credits. So my point is, I think this counts as two for you, so we're all even.
But that's not fair because none of you were there to nudge me awake. So,
shouldn't have to be. It was the beginning of the day. Did you stay up all night? Did you go to a rave?
No. Fine.
If it makes you feel better, I stayed awake during the whole movie, but I felt like I had slept through the whole thing because it was so, like, it was like waking up from a dream.
Well, here's the thing.
This movie.
So here's the funny thing. Talking about Chad's breathing loudly. I fell asleep. When I woke up, they had just... Like, they wiped something down. They're like, oh, what does that mean? And then the credits rolled, and I'm like, I don't know what that means. And I turn and look, and the couple that was sitting right next to me moved 2 seats down. So I think I was, quote-unquote, breathing loudly.
Because the theater I'm taking it was not full.
No.
Right. I saw this film a day ago. In the evening. Granted, it's a Monday evening, but... My theater had 6 people in it total at the start. About an hour in, 2 of those people left.
Oh, wow.
It was a couple, male and female. And before the end of the movie was fully even finished, one more person left. So literally 50% of the audience was gone from the theater before the movie was over. And not even like mid-credit scene or end-credit scene or anything. Before the movie proper was finished telling its story,
yeah,
the population in that theater was cut in half.
Was Thanos there or something?
Yes.
And his name was David Harbour. it's interesting. So I had to end up going back. I was like, all right, let me go back. I'll watch this darn movie. I was like, maybe I could just read a synopsis of somewhere and read somebody's like spoiler review and get the idea of the film. Nobody was willing to do that. I could not like scour enough to find a full like play by play of what happened in the film. So I'm like, crud. All right. And I go and see it at 3:00. And mind you, there's like maybe 9 people in the theater. I get up. And out of the 9, there's maybe 6, maybe 5.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this guy who's in the corner. I didn't see him, but he's behind me, thankfully. And he's just been on his phone. He's like playing games or whatever. He doesn't even care.
I never do this. I think it's the rudest thing to pull out your phone, have the screen glowing and whatever. This movie, I said sloppy about the trailer before.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is very sloppy.
Completely.
Like, it's random, noisy, not even interesting, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I wanted to pull out my phone and literally play a game on my phone. And when I say game, I don't game like people game, right? No. I'm talking like this game, Wordscapes, it's like Boggle on your phone. I would rather be playing Boggle in a movie theater where I paid to see this movie than watch the movie.
Yeah. This movie really is all over the place. And mind you, it's not for the fact that like the elements, like the pieces are not quality. It's like cooking. You know, you can have all the greatest ingredients in the world, but put together wrong or cooked wrong or heated wrong, and you could come out with a mess. It's not to say that the elements of the film were bad. It's to say that their ability to piece it together and create what they came up with was bad. Because one of the things I got a chance to look through as I did my small bit of research is that I found out that...
It took you how many hours?
A lot?
11. after seeing the movie 1.02 times, you then did 11 hours of research or more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not including the time that with the movies. Okay. So either way, one of the things I got a chance to find was the comic short story versions of Hellboy, because Hellboy has several different iterations. He has long whole graphic novels. He also has a bunch of short stories. Some of them run in series, so they're, you know, continuous. They pulled a lot from the comics to create this film. There's a scene in the film where at the very beginning we get where obviously Hellboy goes to Tijuana and he ends up fighting a vampire luchador who happens to be his best friend. That actually comes from the 2010 short story of Hellboy and titled Hellboy in Mexico, which he ends up joining in the mid 50s, a trio of Holy Spirited anointed luchadors who were embodied with the ability to fight vampires by the Virgin Mary herself. And so he teams up with them and they go and they fight. He becomes best friends with the youngest one. And then he ends up getting taken by the vampires in a night of drunken debauchery. And so he ends up going to trying to save him. And they end up having to have this big old wrestling match in this Aztec pyramid where he essentially kills his friend because there was no way to save him.
I would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah,
that sounds
like
amazing.
So much more interesting than this movie.
It is. And the great thing about it is in the story, he's actually relaying this story to Abe Sapien while they're doing research on other things. So it's really cool. And you compare that to the film and it's like, so why is this happening? Why are they, is that like, who's the guy that's calling him? Is that supposed to be his friend? Is that somebody who's like a imposter? There's no bigger picture as to what's happening here. And it kind of just throws you for a loop. Other instances where like they actually pull from the comics, the story of a girl named Alice, the one who is played by Sasha Lane. Her story in terms of her being, you know, mistaken as a changeling and all that kind of stuff is in 1998's The Corpse storyline, where you're introduced to Alice and Grom, which is this pig creature in the film. And that actually has more merit than the way it's done in this film. Not to mention, the woman who plays Alice is not a great actress.
So hard to watch. Like, so I'm the script on this thing is already abysmal.
Yeah.
Like, abysmal. And then you have poor performances on top of it.
Yeah.
And then you have truly atrocious CGI effects kind of sprinkled throughout. Some of them are bigger sequences than others. But like the pig thing, Gort or whatever it is.
His name is Grom.
Grom. Awful.
Mm-hmm.
So terrible. The effects. I mean, the character's awful. The voice acting isn't super great. The storyline is just a mess, but the effects are really bad. Like you said, there are a number of, if they had sat down and said, okay, let's reduce all of this by 30%.
Yeah.
And then stretch some things out, use our budget better, and do it with 30% less, all of that.
Yeah.
It would have been not insufferable. it wouldn't have been like, I feel like having watched the whole movie, I feel like my dominant thought coming out of the theater was, how rude of you guys. Like, all of you for wasting our time in this way. You put way too much in here. It was not polished. It was, like, craftsmanship-wise, atrocious. Mm-hmm. It should have gone straight to DVD, if that.
Yeah.
And yet, here we are coming out of a theater. And, like, how rude. Because, obviously, it's a property that's endured for a number of years.
Yeah.
It does have an audience. I'm not it, but I'm willing to admit that, right? Like, it has an audience. People
yeah.
like it. But I don't think, like, if I imagine something that I love, let's call it the X-Men, which has some fantastical whatever. If they made an X-Men movie that was that much of a mess, I would be very upset. They did that. It's called X-Men Origins Wolverine. It was awful.
It's true.
But it was better than this.
And it's it's interesting because you and I, myself and Chad, we were talking before we went on the air, and it's something that I really truly believe. One of the biggest problems that this film has is it does more work, it puts more work in creating fan service moments for the audiences than it does creating new fans for the franchise. You look at, and I hate to draw the comparison, but let's just be honest, Marvel has succeeded more in creating stories that engage audiences that have created new fans, not so much as fans of old, like aside from like people like Spence or like Chad or Spence, like who have been fans of like either the franchise, whether watching the X-Men cartoons or the Spider-Man cartoons or following the comics like Chad has been ever since the dawn of time. You know, being able to be fans of it and already find this property and become new fans and bring in other people to like it, that's what a good franchise does.
Yeah, your built-in fans are already built in.
Yeah. It's a given already. You don't have to keep pandering to them.
Right.
You have to look towards creating new fans. Whereas on the opposite side of that particular cinematic spectrum, you look at things that DC has done. And I know before anybody goes off and say, oh, you always talk stuff about DC, blah, blah, blah. Give me, you know, let's wait until DC has created some consistency with their films and then we'll start praising them for their larger
They're on works. The cusp of consistency.
They are on the cusp. Let's hope it's consistent, though. That's the thing. But like you look at what they've done prior, and a great example is Batman versus Superman. That film, we know people who... Chad's like side throwing up. Like, we know people who will, to this very moment, to this very day, will stand and praise that film for all the quote unquote great things it does. But the funny thing is, the only argument we've ever heard about it is, oh, well, it does this for the fans. If you saw this animated film, it actually references this scene from this animated film, and it does this from this, you know, comic long ago. That's a one shot that's off to the side, and blah blah blah, or the scene of Batman doing this is from this small story run and blah, blah, blah. It's pulling from everywhere that only the only people who are getting excitement out of it are the true diehard fans.
Even then, though, I don't know. I mean, I haven't read these things. I don't do my homework. I didn't follow Hellboy in any way. I have seen the first movie once, but other than that, like, I have zero knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been years since I've seen it. So I really don't remember that much, aside from the creature effects, which were phenomenal because it was your boy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think even then, again, if this was an X-Men film and you had all these references in there to things that I had read growing up and I liked and I wanted to see on the big screen, but you did it this way, I would be mad at you. The reason why is because it's like that skit on Whose Line Is It Anyway, where they just have strips of paper in their pocket with lines.
Scenes from a hat.
Scenes from a hat. And they're just like, whatever random thing comes out of the pocket, it has a reference point somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? But it's just like, right now, I'm going to pull this strip out and change track for a minute, doing it this way. And then somebody else pulls a different strip of paper out and changes track and does it that. All of them came from somewhere, right? That's the way I think, if I were a fan, I would feel about this movie.
Yeah.
There's just too much going on, and none of it is done well.
No. Yeah. Like, this film pulls from so many different stories and adds that element of that particular story as a plot point or as a beat of the film. Like, everything from, you know, the story of the changeling and Alice all the way to the visitation of Baba Yaga, which you never have that come up again.
Oh,
it's just the one time in the middle of the film, and it's a random thing. You got Howl's Moving Castle coming through the clouds.
Yeah, okay, so, like, that was one of the things that, like, really confused me about this movie. It's just, like, why they chose to just go from, like, thing to thing to thing to thing to thing.
Well, because she's referenced in the comics. So in 1998's Baba Yaga storyline.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I assume she came from somewhere, but like.
Okay, she comes from more than the comics.
That yeah, is. Like.
No, no, no.
I
but,
remember.
But her connection to Hellboy and how she lost her eye, that's in that story. Like, he ends up shooting her eye out. Like, you shoot your eye out, kid. That kind of whole thing. That's where that comes from.
But
that's,
you have to, like.
Yeah, you have to know that story in order for you to appreciate.
Or you have to care. And they did nothing to make you care.
No.
At all in this movie. They just were like, noise, 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 noise. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of
were
like.
Were you saying noise or noise?
Noise.
Definitely not noise. I'm not noising your noise.
Okay. I was just making sure. I'm like, is he saying noise?
But just to draw a parallel, because you were spot on with like Marvel DC, mm-hmm. but I want to put the nail in the coffin.
There we go.
This is the Batman and Robin of any kind of a Hellboy franchise you could consider. This is terrible dialogue.
Oh, man.
Crummy effects.
And Bat
nipples.
Boring
story. Focused on the wrong things. Like, this is the Batman and Robin of what could have been a franchise and hopefully now is not going to be.
Completely. There are so many great elements of this film, but much like the volume one and volume two that I read, they're all short stories that have no parallel to each other, other than the only common thread through them all is Hellboy. And that's like more of an anthological type film, which we have a lot of those. I mean, they create anthological films all the time. You look at the recent Netflix film, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. You know, that's an anthological Western, but from the Coen brothers. You know, you have several horror anthological films. There's a ton of them. But the thing is that when you put them all into one film and you try to draw like this one common thread that goes through all of them to make sure like, oh, you're following that thread because, yeah, it's going to make its way to the end. It doesn't make any sense. Like, how do you find that thread other than Hellboy being that common thread? It makes no sense, and it draws no explanation out for you. Like, the whole Baba Yaga thing makes no sense because she doesn't appear back in the film. She has a small little role, like a small little two-minute role at the beginning. She has another 5-7-minute role near the center of the film, and that's it. That's all she has. Her and, you know, Howl's Moving Castle, the house with chicken feet. She had chicken feet. House had chicken feet.
Yeah, that was an odd choice.
I don't know, but it's interesting to me how they chose to go the route of let's do fan service. Let's focus on the things that true fans are going to want to see and hope to see, and then for everybody else, we'll just give them a gore fest. Because this film definitely had blood and lots of it. Like from the giant... What were they just giants?
Yeah, they were giants that were the stealthiest things on the planet.
Yeah, no joke. Like anything that big that doesn't tiptoe, that can tiptoe that quietly, I'm worried now. Like, I will live underground. Like, but there's plenty of blood.
That's where they're sleeping.
Oh, yes.
Creepy. Just like this movie. But with several elements of the film, it's like, why not just create a sense of consistency? Why not just give the fans, all the fans, something that everybody can come into and love? You want to go the more mature route? That's fine. You want to add more blood? That's fine. You want to add more action sequences? That's fine. But make it relatable all across the board where people can engage from beginning to end and not have those stopping points where it's like, yeah, this is as far as I go because this whole entry part doesn't make sense to me. And that whole entry part doesn't make sense to me either. And you create these rifts. Like, people don't want to see this film for the mere fact that it looks like a mess from the trailer. And rightly so. It is a mess in the film as well, from beginning to end. All 2 hours and 1 minute of it. Like, I seriously could have done this film in an hour and maybe 10 minutes. That's all pretty much I was willing to handle. But it stretched out way too much.
As much as we gave you grief 15 minutes ago, I think your first viewing of this film was the smartest thing you could have done.
I told Spence as soon as I got out, I'm like, yeah, I think I had a better time with my dreams at the first time than actually going and seeing it again. and choosing to go the graphic route, as I said, that was one of my expectations that I hope they didn't go without reason or purpose. And sadly, this film is graphic to no end for no purpose, really. Like, this is one of those things where you're wondering if they have the same budget on blood as Sam Raimi did in the second Evil Dead film. They said there's this urban legend, not urban legend, but this myth or rumor going around that Sam Raimi spent over $1 million in just blood, fake blood for the Evil Dead 2 movie. Because of how much he uses. And in this film, it's like everything that they could imagine doing in terms of to people or in terms of like torturing or chopping or maiming or doing things, they do it in this film. like they have people who are get ripped in half. You have people who are, you know, bitten in half, torn in half, impaled. You have people who are being slowly eaten. You have half-eaten bodies. You have people who get their bodies cut in half. You see, there's just so much. And then you see what
Thank you for all those reminders.
Yeah. But there's no reason to it. There's no point to it. Like,
or a lack of understanding of why it's even happening in the first place in some sequences.
The only interesting thing that I was really hoping to see and get more information on was that giant that crashes into the London Bridge. Like that giant that just has like this red thing in the center of his head and it's floating about it, mm-hmm. above it. It looked interesting. I wanted to know more of that.
I feel like I've seen that before. I feel like it's from something.
I guess it's good as mine. It's from not my from nightmares. Another
comic or anything that you
From what I saw, no.
Okay.
But it felt like that was something of interest because it's not over here destroying, like killing people, or it's not eating people or doing the weird stuff. It's just a monster who needs to be killed. Kind of like in the second, you haven't seen it, Spence, and I know you haven't seen it either, Chad. In the second film, The Golden Army by Guillermo del Toro, there's this forest creature that gets created, and it's like this beautiful giant, you know, grass type, you know, imp or some type of whatever that it's beautiful and it's got grace, and when it dies it becomes like this massive hill of beautiful flowers and all that, and like, and there's beauty to it and it's incredible to look at, and that's kind of what I was thinking with this. Like, it looked interesting, I wanted to know more, and you see about as much of that in the film as you did in the trailer.
Yeah,
there's like literally 30 seconds of it and that was it. This film was so bad. But kind of just coming around the table, what were some of the things, what were you guys' some of the thoughts of, like, the fact of it using so much more gore than it needed to? In my opinion, I thought it was more than it was needed.
Yeah, I mean, it I don't know. Like, I it's just one of those movies that you get to the end of it, and for me, I was like, can I go back in time and stop myself? Like, just don't. Like, life is too precious to waste 2 hours and 1 minute plus whatever preview trailers are in front of this movie. Like, you can do so many other better things with your time. And that sounds very heavy and weighty, but like, time is important. Time is valuable. None of us knows how much we've got. And why would I spend 2 hours using it that way? If I could do it again, I would not do that with my time.
That's an amazing statement. Like, I'm going to die someday. I don't have 2 hours to spend on this movie.
You know, that's right. I would rather fall asleep.
Wow.
Yeah. So, like, the gore for me, though, is like, it just kind of made me wonder, are people that easily rippable? Because I feel like the answer is no.
Like,
I don't know. Some of the physics to like how people were just like being ripped or torn or asunder. Like, I don't know if we're that fragile.
I don't even want to know. Like, frankly, this film put too many images in my mind that I'm willing to, you know, part ways with, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
So, wrapping this film up, and obviously, this film isn't even worth really diving too deep into the story as it's all over the place. Really, you could probably read a synopsis of it somewhere written on a more thorough review. It's just one of those movies where we just got to get out of already because we spent way too much time.
Use your life better, people.
So, with that, let's go ahead and go around the table. We're giving life advice now, Spence.
Yeah, I've heard.
Let's go around the table and start with Spence. Is the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
Like, now we're getting into like the philosophy of what is a movie with this movie. I mean,
what is a movie?
Technically it passes, but only on like the aspect of it has a beginning, middle, and end. I can identify characters. So I guess it passes, but not spectacularly. And I'll give it like a 1.5.
1.5. Chad.
0 out of 0. 0 times 0. Like, it completely failed. I really honestly would rather have spent my life differently for those 2 hours. And yeah, zero, no, like nothing. It was so sloppy. Like, I would rather go and watch like a second grade play where the second graders made the script and the costumes and everything, and it doesn't make sense, because that would have been a more acceptable form of nonsense than this.
Wow. That really puts it in the right kind of light there. The film, for me, fails as well. I don't think the story was concise or consistent enough for me to actually stay engaged, nor were any of the effects.
Well, that's obvious.
Listen,
you set a new record for speed of slumber.
In terms of the storyline, in terms of like the CG was completely inconsistent. There were parts of the film where I thought I was watching The Scorpion King, and it just didn't pan out right. I was like,
such a terrible. Like, when you're on Scorpion King scale, like, you've messed up.
True. You've messed up.
I in terms of monocles, I'm going to give this half a monocle. Only because I got a chance to see that walking giant, and it was actually cool, and I had a really great nap in the first viewing of the
You're giving it a half a monocle for including a character that was shown in the trailer and for a nap on your first viewing.
Yes.
Oh, we have arrived.
Man.
So, don't give me that look.
I feel like I had a very different experience than both of you with this movie. Because, like, I'm, like, so far higher as a score than both of you.
You are.
You passed the movie.
Whoa. Here's the thing. You have yet to see the originals. So you don't even know what glory looks like.
Well, I think that's also probably why this movie doesn't bother me as much.
It's bothering to the max. Spencer, as soon as this podcast is over, we're watching.
Okay, but like, the thing is, you guys both have a point of reference while I don't.
True.
Yeah. Like, I just.
You should have told me.
Like, I was presented garbage, and I'm like, okay, this is garbage. And that's all I can say about it. Like, I don't have any point of reference.
This weekend, we are watching Hellboy 1 and 2 back
to
back.
I have no time. Yes, so if you also have not seen the first two, like, still don't see this one, but at least you won't probably be as upset as, like, friends or family that have seen, like, the first two.
And speaking of friends and family, this is Easter weekend, so do something better with your lives.
Exactly. Don't waste it watching this film, please, because you will regret the time you spend on it. So, that about wraps up another awesome review of From the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Let us know what you thought of the film. If you've seen it, if you haven't seen it, let us know. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you think Spence needs to watch the first two in multiple times over and over until he is old and decrepit? Let us know your thoughts on our page.
That's harsh.
And check out all of our previous episodes at our website at filmlosophers.com. We have a little over 158 episodes. You can check us all out there and let us know your thoughts. this film seriously has thrown us all for a loop. We got Under the Bed over here. We
got Under the Bed.
Got Breaky McBreak voice over here, and I'm just Mr. Sleepy. So, yeah, that about wraps it up. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm done with this episode. I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.